Hear that?
Pumpkin.
That's fall calling. And the pumpkin spice latte is back at Starbucks. From that first sweater to late autumn weather, it's all a fall in just one sip. Order ahead on the Starbucks app.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you can make sure your ride stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED headlights, exhaust kits, turbochargers, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Well, what is going on, everybody? Welcome into the Overreaction Sports Podcast. I am your host, Joe Miller. You can find me on Twitter at Joe Miller Wired. That handle, once again, at Joe Miller Wired. It is an Overreaction Friday, and I am excited, as I said, to be here with you guys today. Overreaction Friday. So Joe, tell me what Overreaction Friday is about. Well, Overreaction Friday is basically me talking about essentially the things that we are over, the topics that we're sick of, the things that we're seeing on whether it's social media or on ESPN and the NFL Network, or things that we're reading on Twitter, just basically all the stuff that we're done reacting to. There's just certain things that I don't want to talk about anymore, and there's certain things that I don't want to think about anymore, and there's things that I'm just over. So Sunday is for overreacting to what we saw. Literally what that word means. And then Fridays are for being overreacting to stuff. So that's the premise of the show. As I said, I'm super excited that you guys are with me today. I've got some really good stuff to discuss. But before we get to the things that I'm over, I want to talk quickly about the story of last week's game. Every single Friday since I've been doing this, except for probably the first Friday, which was during the bye week, I come in and I talk to you about the story of the last game, or at least what I feel was the story of the last game the Bills played. So for me, the story of last week's game is, as I've kind of already set up with you, that every week has a story. Every game, sometimes there's a story in a subplot, but by and large, there's one story. So for me, as I was saying, the story of last week's game is what the defense did in the second half. The first half, we all watched it. They were getting embarrassed. They were getting annihilated. I mean, it's 36-year-old or 34-year-old Adrian Peterson. I don't know. He's older than Methuselah. He's not older than Frank Gore, who has been our starting running back in the for the Buffalo Bills. Possibly not this week. Actually, I don't think he started last week's game, but I can't remember off the top of my head if Devin Singletary started it or not. I want to say he did. But last week, in the first half of that game, they gave up on the ground almost 100 yards to Adrian Peterson rushing. And it was that moment, as we talked about it even last week, and just watching this defense get slayed on the ground, up the middle, and just watching Adrian Peterson do what Adrian Peterson was doing. And, you know, let's be honest, it's Adrian Peterson. I mean, Adrian Peterson has a very good shot of being a Hall of Fame running back. Some of you probably aren't even on the fence about it. He is. a Hall of Fame running back. Some of you are on the fence. You could go either way. And then some of you are probably like, no, he's not. I'm not here to debate whether or not he is a Hall of Fame running back. I can tell you that I've been playing fantasy football for a very long time. I've been playing fantasy football all the way back to before we had stats on the internet, and on Monday morning, everybody raced to get the newspaper so that we could count our receptions and count our yards by tens. So I've been playing fantasy football for a long time, and there was a long time where Adrian Peterson was, if not the first pick in every NFL draft, he was top two, top three. But I believe that the story of last week's game was the switch, the adjustments that were made by our defensive staff and our players from the first half to the second half. And I'm not trying to somehow swayed you into thinking that had they not made those adjustments, that somehow we would have lost. I don't think that's accurate at all. I think all of us, I said it last week, or I should say I said it Sunday on the show, there was no point in that game where I was like, if they don't do something fast to fix this, then we might lose this game. I don't think that the game was ever in jeopardy. That is not the emotion that I was feeling. Now, I'm not saying that the Redskins, there's no way in hell that the Redskins couldn't beat the Bills. Obviously, it's the NFL, and these guys are getting paid. And you never know what the rest of the game is, the story of the rest of the game is going to tell you. But there was just frustration, right? There was just very much a, what is going on, guys? Like, let's do this. Where's the defense that shut down Saquon Barkley? Where's the defense that shut down Le'Veon Bell? I mean, that's what we were looking for, right? I mean, where's the defense that shut down Joe Mixon? So the story of this game for me, as I said, was the difference between the defense in the first half and the second half, and basically the defense stacking the box and telling Haskins to beat us. Hey, we're going to put nine guys in the box. We're done with this. We're going to do better with our gap assignments. We're going to do better about our run fits, and we're going to shut the run down. You are not going to run on us. So Dwayne, rookie, you're going to have to beat us. And he couldn't. But the positives that come out of this game for me from a defensive standpoint, knowing that they can find who they're supposed to be or who they have been so far this year outside of the beginning of the Miami game, and then obviously the Eagles game, and then the first half of the Redskins game, provides me with a lot of hope and a lot of encouragement. Now, I asked you on Sunday if we're ready to admit two things. Number one, that there could possibly be a book out on this defense. We are going to find out soon. The tests that are coming in for us as a defense, I hope they're studying. I hope they're doing their homework. I hope they're doing the things, you know, as Urban Meyer says, embracing the grind in his book Above the Line, embracing the grind from Wednesday to Friday to make sure that Sunday takes care of itself, because the tests are coming in hard in the next couple weeks, starting this week with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. So I asked you last week, or I should say, I keep saying last week, but it's Sunday. I asked you Sunday if you were ready to come down to where I am, which is potentially that, you know, we're going to admit that there might be a book out on this defense. And with that, that are we looking at a situation where the defense might be more of a concern than Josh Allen at this point? And I'll be honest with you, as much as people are not ready to get there, and there's people that just aren't going to buy into Josh Allen, at least until there's some of you that are never going to buy into Josh Allen. There are people in every fan base, whether it's the Buffalo Bills or whoever, that will never like the quarterback. It's just wired in some people. That's just the way that they're always going to be. But some of you are not on the Josh Allen train. For those of you that have a foot in the Josh Allen train, you're not on the Dable train. And then there's some of you that are on the Josh Allen train and on the Dable train and are encouraged by what you've seen over the last couple weeks from Josh Allen. Josh Allen hasn't thrown an interception. I think he's averaging 2 touchdowns per game. He's actually playing pretty well. Yes, there's moments in each game where it gets a little bit sleepy time. But I think getting back to the point that the story of this football game for me was how the defense recovered from the last, we'll call it 5 halves, 2.5 games, and what they showed us against the Redskins in the second half by shutting down Adrian Peterson pretty much completely. What we need to see is that going forward. Jordan Phillips was quoted as saying, as much as they were trying to keep it tight vested, I heard a couple different interviews after the game that they didn't want to give away necessarily the adjustments they had made or what they had talked about in the locker room. But Jordan Phillips actually said that one of the issues that they had talked about at halftime was that they were allowing themselves to get upfield on the snap of the ball too fast, which was providing the running back an opportunity to run past them, which was basically compromising the gaps and compromising the linebackers' abilities to do their job. So he said that in the second half, what they did was they waited, right? The ball snapped, and instead of pressing up the field and the offensive linemen allowing them to step them back 2 or 3 steps into the offensive, not backfield, but into the offensive zone, they basically just held their position on the line, which allowed the linebackers time to get into their gaps, which shut down Adrian Peterson. If the Bills can do that on Sunday, then I think that we have a great opportunity this week. But I think they're going to have to do it with 9 men in the box, and we'll talk about that in a minute. So as I said, as much as that game was never in doubt, I don't think it was, you know, the Redskins, the offense was playing well enough. There were no goofy turnovers or giveaways. Just Josh Allen dropped one ball that we recovered. You know, the story of that game was the defense and the switch that they made between the first half and the second half. So every game, as I said, has a story. I'd love to hear from you guys what you feel the story of each game is, kind of as the season progresses. I'm always looking for feedback. I tell you guys that all the time. I'm always looking for content. I'm always looking for interaction. So any way you guys can interact with me, the more the better. So with that, let's transition now to the things that I am over. And what I mean by that is the things that I'm done thinking about, the things that I'm done talking about, the feelings that I have that I no longer necessarily care about, the things that I'm not concerned with, the things that I hope to help you guys get to the point where you're not concerned with them. And I think the first thing for me that I've pretty much had enough of, and it was about Tuesday, is I'm just sick and tired of every single person calling out every other single person that's upset about the way the Bills played on Sunday and the fact that the Bills are 6-2. So I'm tired of, as much as everybody's tired of the people who are mad about the Bills being 6-2 and not playing well, I'm more tired at this point of the people calling out the people who are upset that the Bills are 6-2 in the way they're playing. You know that it's a slow content week when every single show, I will admit it, Sunday, I started out. I think I recorded my show at 5 o'clock on Sunday after the game, and I called people out on it. Hey, it's 6-2. The Bills haven't been 6-2 since 1993, 26 years. How old were you? 35, blah, 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 right? But for cripes sakes, it's Friday. If they haven't stopped complaining now, they're not going to stop complaining. There's just some people you're never going to be able to reach or convince. So why bother? Let it go. Some people just live in a world of full-on criticism. These are the people that have basically, not supported, but given us Jerry Sullivan and Mike Shope and their platform. It's funny that there's this fan base, and it's been this way for decades, that love the Bills and love to talk about the Bills, and we want the Bills to be good, and we want the Bills to win. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with criticism. Healthy criticism is important. But nitpicking and finding fault in everything just after a while gets old. But there's people in this world that are just, they just live in that space. That's why we have Sully, and that's why we have Shope. That's why they're still here in Buffalo, because there are people that call into their shows and say, love it. But as a podcaster, I'm over it. Like, I'm going to ignore it. I'm in the same position with the people that are mad about the Bills being 6-2 and the way that they've quote unquote been playing. I'm in the same position with them as I am with trying to convince people that Josh Allen has a high ceiling and could be good. But there was a moment around Tuesday where I was just done hearing about it. I was done reading about it. I don't want to see it on Twitter anymore. If people are going to gripe and complain, and I want to use bad words, I want to use foul language. If people are going to be just negative Nancys, and yes, I'm making this G-rated, let them. People whine. People gripe. People complain. Move on. Ignore them. Mute them. Whatever you got to do, just let it go. I'm just tired of hearing about it. And I think you are too, because I think we're over it. So this is the last time you're hopefully going to hear from me after a Bills win. Talk about people that find reasons to complain about stuff. Just bought a Ferrari. Yeah, but don't like the tires on it. Like, come on, right? Let it go. Which brings me to my next thing that I'm over. And I think I only have two things today for you that I'm over on this Overreaction Friday. And this is a little bit different. Because for me, there's certain words that are used that media types in Buffalo talk about that they're over, right? Whether it's the word momentum. Oh, the momentum. And we hear a certain TV or radio personality and media personality in Buffalo talk about momentum and how there's no such thing as momentum. And some guys just outplayed other guys, but momentum, there's no, like, it's not a real thing. And the momentum really swung or did it and blah, 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 blah. Momentum doesn't exist. It's not real. And then the other one is culture. Everybody in Buffalo loves to beat on the word culture. Culture's not a real thing. Culture doesn't matter. Oh, yeah? Ask the Browns about culture right now. Culture doesn't matter. But there's a word that I'm over. There's a word that I'm done with. And I'm not saying that it's not a real word. See, I'm a believer in momentum. I've been in buildings. I've been in stadiums and in places. I played sports growing up. I've been in situations where momentum has taken over. For whatever reason, something happened in the game and things shifted, whether you want to call it confidence or you want to call it, I don't know, whatever it is. And momentum changed and there was just no way to stop what was going on in the game. I am a big leadership guru and a big leadership fan. I'm a student of leadership. I've told you guys about that. I have been in organizations and I am a supervisor, hiring manager, executive type who hires people. And I've seen bad culture. I've been a part of bad culture. I have created bad culture. I've also had to fix bad culture. And I've seen what people and organizations can do if culture is bad versus culture being good. Culture, I believe, trumps strategy every day. A team with great culture can beat another team with good players and good strategy, because if they have bad culture, that's a team that generally can't play together. And that's one thing we know about our football team right now, is they're playing together. So Joe, just get to the point. What is the word that you're over? The word that I'm over, because I don't think that it's fairly being used against us, the common everyday fan, is the word execute. I'm tired of hearing about this word execute. And I'm not saying that execute isn't a real word, like momentum, much like culture. It absolutely is a real word. But I don't like the way that it's used against us in interviews, after games, after losses specifically. Oh, well, we just didn't execute well. Oh, well, I got to check the tape and see how we executed there. Or maybe we executed well. I got to check the tape and see how well we executed. Execute, execute. Well, what does it mean to execute well? What does it mean to execute bad? I'm a common, everyday fan that doesn't really know a whole lot about X's and O's. I mean, I see things. I think I see things. I've watched a lot of football. I played football growing up. But this word execute is used against us. And then, you know, you think you figured something out, or you think you're onto something as a fan. I'm just not so sure that, you know, this player's good, or I'm not so sure that this was the right play call, or I'm not so sure of whatever. And then somebody pops in and goes, well, maybe they just didn't execute it. Well, no crap, they didn't execute it. But I think execute, when it comes to execution, and specifically, you know, poor execution, I just feel like we're being lulled to sleep as fans into like soft excuse making. So instead of telling you the real answer, that person just isn't good enough, or we're not good enough, we're just going to roll it up into a really nice, pretty little ball in our press conference and say, we didn't execute. Because it's just vague enough to provide us with the opportunity to go, oh, we just didn't execute. Which leaves us with this place in our mind, this place in our psyche, in our brain, in our whatever you want to call it, that says, maybe we'll execute better next time. What if we don't? What if we can't? Yeah, we just didn't execute. So for me, being over this word execution, I want to bring some clarity for me personally and to you, the listener, the fan, on what are, in my opinion, the two types of bad execution. Because I think it can be surmised. I'm sure that there are people out there way smarter than me. They can talk about 15 ways to Sunday on how execution can mean 15 different things, and poor execution explicitly. However, I'm going to boil it down to two things. Two types of bad execution that basically roll up into a giant ball of I'm sick and tired of hearing about execution if you're not going to give me more information as it pertains to execution. Because there's two types of execution. When we're speaking of bad execution, and I'm going to totally generic them up and make them as simple as possible for all of us to be okay with. First one, obvious. Obvious bad execution. As it pertains to, we did not execute the play. We did not execute our responsibility. We did not execute the assignment that we were given. We missed a block. We made a mental mistake. Took a bad penalty. Poor fundamentals. We didn't execute, meaning we beat ourselves because we didn't do what we were coached up to do. We beat ourselves because we didn't do what we were trained to do. We beat ourselves because I was confused about the play call. I went right when I should have went left. Bad execution. As it pertains to, we just got something wrong inside the play, and it can be fixed. That's the important part. Bad execution, poor execution that can be fixed. And this is, I would love to get to a space or a place in this world where when coaches are giving us coach speak, that they're talking about bad execution, poor execution that can be fixed, and poor execution that can't be fixed. Because the other part, the other generic side of poor execution, the word I want to throw away, is you're just not good enough. You just aren't good enough. As a player, as a team, as a coach, as a quarterback, as a wide receiver, as a running back, as a tackle, as a whatever, you're frankly just not good enough, and there's no way to fix it. You executed bad because you suck at whatever it is we're trying to get you to do. When you can't block somebody, when you get beat, right? You get beat on a route or you get beat somewhere. You're trying to block a guy and he beats you, gets to the quarterback. You're trying to get to the quarterback as a defensive end or a linebacker and you get beat and get blocked. You know, Aaron Maben, high motor guy. And I don't think any, I think the best thing you can say about Aaron Maben when he was a Bill is the dude didn't stop. But he just wasn't good enough. He couldn't execute. Whatever it is he was trying to accomplish, he couldn't get to the quarterback. He couldn't execute. When you can't cover a guy, so a defensive back that's lined up against a wide receiver, whether it's the number one wide receiver or the number two, the X or the Y or the Z guy, and he's constantly getting beat, you just suck. You're not great. You might have been great in college. You're probably one of the world's best athletes, but at this level, you're not good enough. If you're a wide receiver and you can't get open, how about if you can't catch, Kelvin Benjamin? You can't execute. You're just not good enough. That's something that can't be fixed. So if I'm thinking about that, I'm thinking about Coach McDermott this past weekend. And I love Coach McDermott because a lot of times he'll give you a crease in the armor, right? He'll allow you in for, he'll let his guard down and he'll give you something. And this past week he did. He said, there are moments there's plays or every play where the offensive line, if they're getting pushed off the ball, that's unacceptable. They're getting beat. So then it has to be boiled down to, inside of this word execution, are they good enough? Can they get their hips lower? Can they get their pad level lower? Can they do, can they drive off the ball? Can they do what they got to do? Are they, their pull assignments and whatever it is, are they doing that properly or are they just not good enough? Here is a better example. There's only one returning player from our entire offensive roster last year from an offensive line standpoint, Deion Dawkins. Everybody else, not good enough. Most of them, if not all of them, are out of the NFL. Not good enough. It's not that they couldn't execute because they needed to be coached better. They couldn't execute because they needed to study better. They just aren't good enough. A good example of the obvious stuff. So the obvious poor execution, and what we mean by that, going back to it, the first type is when we miss an assignment. So I was super critical, and I tweeted about it again when I rewatched the game this past week. I was super critical about the awesome series, the second drive that the Bills had in the game. They got down to the 2-yard line on the back shoulder throw where the defender wasn't looking to John Brown. We have first down from the 2. The first play after that is Josh Allen. He's got two players out like in the pattern. One is Gore and one is Lee Smith. Lee Smith is carrying a guy into the end zone who's committing illegal contact the whole way. Allen didn't like what he saw from Gore, so instead of throwing the ball away, Allen took the sack. That's not the play I'm talking about. The best example of poor execution that's obvious that can be fixed is the next play. The next play, the Bills line up, they're going to call the jet sweep. On Allen's left is Dawson Knox, who's covering the end, and then John Brown, who's basically got the assignment, the responsibility of the linebacker. The ball is snapped. Isaiah McKenzie comes across Josh Allen's face. He flicks the ball to him. And what happens is Dawson Knox goes to take John Brown's guy. So he lets the end come completely free. The end stands up, takes 3 steps or 4 steps, and Isaiah McKenzie's running right into him because Dawson Knox missed his block. Poor execution on the play. He missed his assignment. Totally different than Jordan Mills just being bad at football. So I'm over this execution word, because I don't think it's a fair word to use for us as fans, because it's just wrapped up in this nice little ball and it's just set out there really pretty. You know, I'm really not sure. We have to look at the tape, but it, you know, and I have to check the execution, but we just may not have executed that well. Well, what do you mean? Could you have executed it better, or is that guy just not good enough? Because if he's not good enough, get him out of here. And I don't pick on players often, but a perfect example is Cody Ford. I loved the Cody Ford pick. Loved the Cody Ford pick. Right now, Cody Ford is not executing well as a tackle. And by that, I mean he's not good enough. Ty Ensekhi played the whole entire game last week because Cody Ford was still struggling from an injury and he was a scratch. And it was obvious that Ty Ensekhi knows how to execute as a tackle. So I'm just over that word. I'm just tired of being fed this word that is ambiguous to basically appease the media, appease us as fans, and put us in a situation where it's just like, well, I guess the coach said they didn't execute it, which means next time they try that, it'll work. We've been watching 20 years of bad execution, poor execution, for one reason or another, whether we're not good enough, usually that's what it is, or we're not coached well enough because the coaches aren't good, or they just missed assignments, which is a coaching thing, or bad play calls or bad penalties or whatever. So for me, I'm just over that word. I'm over the word execution. I just can't do it anymore. So yeah, that's all I've got on that. So those are my two things that I am over on this Overreaction Friday. I can just do without both those things going forward. I'm done picking on people. I'm done trying to convince people that the Bills are worth watching and being positive about and yada, yada, yada. And I'm just done hearing about this word execution. So, and I know that sounds strange and I could be in my own boat, but this is the reality is this is my podcast and the tens of you that are listening. If you don't like it, there's 1,000 other podcasts you can listen to, but I'm just trying to bring it to you real. I'm trying to bring it to you straight. I'm trying to tune into what I believe is what you guys feel as well. So hopefully I'm doing that for you. Now, the last thing that I want to talk about, and then I'm going to let you guys go, and this shouldn't take long, is I want to look to Cleveland. We're headed into Cleveland, and these are notorious for being hard-fought, difficult games. I would love to see the last time that the Cleveland Browns and the Buffalo Bills played each other with the same two head coaches, because it probably may never have happened. Like the amount of coaches that these both of the, or quarterbacks, the same two quarterbacks played against each other as a Browns team and a Bills team, like within a couple years of each other. It's probably never happened. Regardless of that, these games are always hard-fought, tough battles. Whether it's the 3-9 Brady Quinn game, or the snow game in Cleveland, or the game that was on Sunday Night Football or Thursday Night Football. I went to that game in Cleveland, the game that Brian Hoyer got hurt when Kiko Alonso supermanned over him and he blew his knee out, and like Browns fans were mad, and the E.J. Manuel game, which I thought for sure we were going to win, and the wheels came off, we lost. Poor execution, right? Somebody didn't execute. But this game, I don't know how you feel, scares the crap out of me. We are 6-2. We've got the number 3 defense in the NFL. We're going into play a team at home, their home, that's 2-6, that has an extremely talented roster. We're 2.5-point underdogs. They've got, as I just said, talent up and down the roster outside of their offensive line. Their offensive line is incredibly suspect, which, oh, by the way, their running back is completely impervious to. Nick Chubb is awesome. Their offensive line is horrible. Nick Chubb is awesome. So imagine us last year having that horrific, bad executing offensive line that we had, and LeSean McCoy being dominant behind that line. What happened? LeSean McCoy got completely stuffed. He was awful last year. And the reason that he was awful was because the offensive line was awful. horrible. So this game scares the crap out of me. Kareem Hunt is coming back this game. Thank you very much. So I'm nervous. I think this game is going to tell us a lot about the Bills. I think this game is going to tell us a lot about Sean McDermott. I think this game is going to tell us a lot about Josh Allen. I think this game is going to tell us a whole lot about this fan base. I'm totally confused as to how we're underdogs against a 2-6 team, regardless of the talent up and down the roster. They're a complete tire fire. They just had to cut wave one of their defensive backs because he was threatening to murder people on Twitter. OBJ was quoted, coming off the field, quoted as saying, what do I have to do to get the ball around here? They're literally, quite possibly, about to fire their head coach, one and done, for the second time in 10 years. This game scares me, because if there's a team that's backed in a corner, it's them. Baker Mayfield is Baker Mayfield. OBJ, Jarvis Landry, Nick Chubb, Njoku. Who was it? Myles Garrett on the defensive line. They've got talent. They've got so much talent. But we play as a team. I saw this a couple places. So I think I heard it actually. It was Joe Marino's show. He was talking to Locked On Browns, the guy from the Locked On Browns podcast. And he said that the biggest difference between the Bills and the Browns is that the Bills, they're not a complete team, but they play like a complete team. They play like a team that loves each other. Culture. Culture. Funny word, that culture word that people don't believe in Buffalo. I think this game is going to depend a lot on our defense, obviously. Are we going to stack the box, commit to our assignments, our run assignments, our run fits? I think the defensive backs are going to play on an island a little bit, and they're going to dare Baker Mayfield to throw on them. And here's the thing. If they can get pressure on Baker Mayfield, he is erratic. He is not comfortable back there, and he, this year, has made a lot of mistakes. A lot of mistakes. I think this game is going to tell us a lot about Josh Allen. Josh Allen, this is the game you need to put a complete game together. Josh, you need to show me all the stuff you've learned this year. Everything that you've learned this year, I need to see it come together this game. Show me what you've learned. Show me what you've learned. I talked to you guys a couple weeks ago that I was done looking for a statement game from this football team, from the Buffalo Bills, because I see a lot of ugly wins. And with ugly wins, there's a lot of ugly losses, because you can't win ugly and lose pretty. If you're a team that wins ugly, you're going to lose horribly, ugly, awfully. But this game, in my opinion, just winning this game is a statement. Just winning this game, I think, is going to be a statement. We're going to find out who this Buffalo Bills team is this week. I believe that if the Bills win this game, we are absolutely going to the playoffs. However, if we lose this game, it doesn't mean that we're not going to the playoffs. The wheels don't come off if we lose this game. But I think we're going to learn a lot about this football team if they win. I think Devin Singletary will end up being our primary featured back starter. I think that what we saw against the Redskins is going to continue for this football team. And I'm excited to see it. I can't wait to see it. He's averaging 4 point yards a carry. Or I should say he did average 4 point yards a carry against the Redskins. Conversely, the Browns are giving up 143 yards a game on average to running backs, opposing teams' running backs. Last week, Philip Lindsay averaged 10 yards a carry. So I'm excited to see Devin Singletary against this Browns defense. I'm excited to see Josh Allen against this Browns defense. I'm apprehensively, cautiously optimistic to see our defense against Nick Chubb. and Kareem Hunt. But I believe that this game is important. All of them are important, but I think this one is going to begin to define who the Buffalo Bills are in 2019 and beyond. I know that's saying a lot, and some of you are like, oh, come on, Joe. Come on. This game against the Browns are 2-6. Yeah, but this is a sneaky 2-6 football team that, oh, by the way, graced the cover of Sports Illustrated and was a Super Bowl favorite by a lot of people before the season, before they started playing football games. And I'm on Twitter before the season started telling people, hey, you know, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Every time a super team has been tried to be put together, it's failed miserably. And this is another example. Super teams just don't work. Maybe it's because of culture. Maybe it's because they don't execute. I don't know what the answer is. I just know that it hasn't worked in the past. But this is a sneaky good team, and this is a team that if they put it together like they did against the Ravens, are going to punch you in the face. The Bills have a test ahead of them. And I can't wait for this game on Sunday. And as I said, I firmly believe that if the Bills win this game, just winning is going to be a statement to the NFL. I promise you, as much as we all want respect around the league, as much as we all Tuesday morning read the power rankings and want to see ourselves top five, as much as that stupid thing came out today from, I don't know, ESPN or NFL Network or wherever, saying that the Bills have a 53 or 43% chance of making the playoffs at 6-2. People are peeking around the corner at this game. And they're watching. They're going to watch this game, and they're going to watch these results. They're going to see how Josh Allen plays, and they're going to make a determination based on this game as to who the Buffalo Bills really are. And I'm here for it. So I'm going to wrap it up with this. I probably need to do a prediction. Last week, as I told you, my last final victory lap is right now. Last week, I predicted that the Bills would beat the Washington Redskins 24-9, and lo and behold, they beat the Redskins 24-9. However, I did not, as I promised you I would, buy a lottery ticket. I should have. Never got around to it. I'm way too busy. Too busy, apparently, just to stop at a gas station and buy a lottery ticket. Prediction, and I'll be honest with you, I have not thought a whole lot about a prediction. Given it zero thought, what do I think the Bills are going to do this weekend? So if I had to surmise and basically scheme in my brain and think about what the Bills are going to do well, I think they're going to run well. I think Josh Allen, you know what, as much as there's a monkey on his back and you know the deep ball is the biggest monkey on his back in the 300-yard game, I think he has the ability that he could throw for 300 yards this week. I think Devin Singletary could rush for his first 100-yard game this week. I hope to God this is not a shootout, because if it does, it's going to speak to some defensive woes continuing for us as a football team. But I'm going to go 28 Buffalo Bills over the Cleveland Browns, who score 17 points. 28-17. That is my prediction for this weekend. Guys, I so much appreciate, more than you will ever know, that you tune in and listen to me ramble on about our Buffalo Bills and have my own opinions. And I hope that my opinions connect with you and you share them at times, if not most of the time. As always, I'm always looking for feedback, looking for connection, looking for interaction from you, the listener, on Twitter and other places. I'm really excited about this football game. I hope to come back to you on Sunday doing a victory lap, singing the shout song. But for now, I hope you guys have a good weekend. I hope you enjoy this Friday, this Saturday. I hope you enjoy the game on Sunday. We'll talk to you guys soon. This is, once again, Joe Miller. I am the host of the Overreaction Sports Podcast. You can find me at Joe Miller Wired. Thank you guys for tuning in. And as always, go Bills.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Fresh Step knows you'd do anything for your cat. From getting them food that's nicer than yours to letting them take a midday nap on your keyboard. So why settle for basic litter? Switch to Fresh Step. Fresh Step cat litter locks in liquid and odor on contact, giving you up to 15 days of odor control. Learn more at freshstep.com. Step it up to Fresh Step with superior odor control. Versus leading value clumping litter, Fresh Step is a registered trademark of the Clorox Pet Products Company. Febreze is used under license from the Procter & Gamble Company or its affiliates.
She said, get out the chat room and clean my Glad Stretch. Feeling fine, so fresh.
The Glad Girl Group coming at you with a throwback jam. That was Glad Force Flex Drawstring Trash Bags featuring Pine Sol Original Scent. And that's better than all good. It's all Glad.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat. Literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.